Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
We're on part two of our Love is the Most Powerful Force series. And today we're going to talk about love as being the most powerful force in your marriage. I want you to imagine with me a couple on their wedding day, all right? And the flowers have been arranged. The musicians are in place, the reception has been set up, the cake has been delivered, and the entire wedding party is decked out in their wedding attire. Everything is set for the wedding to take place. Everyone's in their positions. The canon in D starts. From the side, the minister and the groom enter and proceed to the front of the church. One by one, the beautiful bridesmaids are escorted by the handsome groomsmen. Couple number one. Couple number two. Couple number three. Couple number four. Yes, it's a big budget, okay? The best man and the maid of honor. Next, we have the ring bearer in his little tux and tails, carrying his cute little pillow. And at his side is the beautiful little flower girl with her hair all up in curls. As they saunter down the aisle, she's carefully dropping rose petals, kind of creating a colorful trail of breadcrumbs that will lead the bride to the love of her life. Finally, the moment everyone has been waiting for, the bride makes her grand entrance. At the side of her father, they come majestically down the aisle. She's in a satin gown with lace, adorned with crystals. She looks like a princess, a vision of grace and beauty. And as the groom sees the love of his life, his face flashes with joy. And when she sees him, she flashes with joy. There's so much happiness between the two of them. When she reaches the front, they see the look into each other's eyes. They think the day has finally come. It's finally here. They grab hands and they walk up and approach the minister. And as they do, the music subsides. There's a hushed quiet. The minister says, "So, when are you going to get a divorce?" The bewildered couple looks at each other. Well, what's going on here? This wasn't what we practiced last night at the dress rehearsal. And they flash this look at him like, "What are you doing?" And it doesn't faze him. He goes on, "When are you going to get a divorce?" And he says, "How long do you want this thing to last? How long do you want to be married? 2 years? 5 years? 5 decades? 6 months? How long do you want this marriage to last?" Now, if the couple, before they deck the pastor, okay, if they give an answer, what do you think their answer would be? What would your answer be? How long do you want your marriage to last? I think the response would be, forever, as long as we both shall live, till death do us part. And that's not means we're taking 45s at each other. I mean, it's a natural causes type kind of thing. I don't believe there's anyone in their right mind that when they approach the altar, they're thinking, "Yeah, I'm only expecting this thing to last a few years." Most couples, maybe those not in Hollywood, but most couples, they approach marriage saying, "I want this to last for a lifetime. I want this to be final. I don't want my marriage to fail." I think that is our desire. We want our marriage to succeed. So the question is, if that is probably every couple's desire, excuse me, if that's their desire, why do so many marriages end in divorce? Why do so many marriages fail? And I think the answer to that is that couples stop loving each other. And you say, "No, wait a second, Craig, that's really simplistic, okay? They stop loving each other." But I think we really have a skewed view of what love is. Because love is not goosebumps. Love is not romance. Love is not passion. Love is not a warm, fuzzy feeling. I think many times people mistake attraction, goosebumps, passion, companionship, all these things for love, but that's not what love is. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and Ephesians chapter 5. Ecclesiastes 9 and Ephesians 5. We're going to talk about love today, this Sunday, 5 days before Valentine's Day. Hint, 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 guys. Friday, treat your wife like a queen. I'm trying to minimize my marriage counseling load here. How many got the hint? All right, we're good. We're good. Today I want to talk about love because I really think we have a misunderstanding of what love is, especially in marriage. And it's because of that marriages fail. Because if you have real love, genuine love, then love produces a super marriage. Last week as we kicked off our series, we said that love has superpowers. And I believe that when you have love in your marriage, those superpowers of love transform your marriage and it gives you an incredible marriage. Your marriage will not survive, but it will thrive. But when you stop loving each other, that's when your marriage loses its luster. It loses its zeal. It loses its devotion and its zest. And this is what takes place. When you've got love in a marriage, when you have love, love produces strength and support. Now, there's some spots in your notes, some lines. If you got your notes this morning, love produces strength and support. You say, how does that happen? Well, if you're guaranteed, first of all, how many know that you will have tough times in life? And getting marriage does not take those tough times away. In fact, I can almost guarantee being married will probably produce more tough times. Some of you are shaking your head. Yeah. It is a guarantee you will have problems in marriage. You will experience tough times. If you love each other, when you go through those tough times, you will strengthen and support each other and help each other instead of being alone. But if you don't have love, you're going to find your marriage unraveling. You're not supported. You don't have strength. And you're going to feel fragmented and weak and just horrible. You're going to be miserable because love strengthens and supports. Love also, the next one, brings security. When you know that your spouse cares for you, they're watching out for your best interest. They have your needs, your desires at heart. There's not the selfishness. Then you have security. You have stability in a marriage. There's peace in your heart and in your relationship because you know that you can trust that person. Love also creates closeness. Out of this trust and security, you're willing to open your heart to the other person. And as both spouses open their hearts and are transparent and are real, their spouse becomes their confidant, their best friend, and you become closer with them than any other person. Your spouse becomes your best friend. So love produces closeness. And then love generates joy. We talked a little bit about this last week, how God's love generates joy in our life. But when you love each other, it generates joy because you love being with this person. Why? You're strengthened. You're supported. There's closeness. There's stability. There's peace. And so when it's time to come home at night, you're looking forward to seeing them instead of saying, man, I don't want to go home and face that wicked witch of the West. I don't want to be around that jerk. All he does is watch ESPN all night long. I know. If you've got love in your life, then you're going to want to come home. Love generates joy. And the last thing, love leads to great sex. That was a place for a good amen. Here's the thing. When you have all the above flowing in your marriage, it's going to produce great sex. Sex will not be a chore. Now, I'm not saying there won't be times when you're tired or weary or you just feel like, ugh, I don't want to do this. But that is the exception, not the rule. If you've got wonderful intimacy and closeness and trust and security and strength and support, the natural outflow is going to be powerful physical intimacy because that's the way God created us. Now, how many of you want a super marriage? Yeah, you can raise your hand. That's good. You want a super marriage? So to have a super marriage, then we need to walk out true love, genuine love, not what society has taught us what love is. And there's three characteristics of real love in your notes that we're going to look at this morning. Number one is love is a daily decision. That's the first characteristic of love. Love is a daily decision. How many of you remember the movie Top Gun? Some of you saw that movie Top Gun? And where Tom Cruise approaches the girl that he likes, he goes up to her and, "You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips." And the song is called, "You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin'." Friends, you don't lose the loving feeling. When you've lost love, you haven't lost it. You've made a decision to lose it. Let me explain. Last week when we talked about love, we talked about there's different kinds of love. Jesus said, "Peter, do you agape me?" And that agape was an unconditional love, a selfless love, a giving kind of love. Just as God so loved the world, he gave. We're supposed to be giving and selfless and sacrificing. It's unconditional. Love is not based upon our feelings. Agape love is a matter of our will. I decide whether I will love or not. The phileo kind of love is the affection, the friendship, the trust, the devotion. That's based upon liking a person. That's based upon how you feel about someone. And in marriage, real love is agape. It's not phileo. You do not fall out of love like you fall out of bed. Okay? Falling out of love is not an accident. It is on purpose. Likewise, falling in love is not an accident. It is a decision. It is intentional. For example, you see that cute little blonde. In my case, it was a gorgeous brunette. She's now a blonde. But I saw her and it was like, I made that decision to go over and talk to her. "Hi, it's at a football game. I'm Craig. What's your name?" "Rebecca." "Rebecca what?" "Larson." "Where are you from?" "Iowa." I could tell that wasn't going anywhere. It didn't go anywhere for 2 months. But later on, and I had been trying to bump into her after her classes or just happen to have lunch with her and sit down at the same table for 2 weeks, and it didn't work. I mean, I was either too late or too early, or some other bozo was sitting next to her, and I didn't have a chance. And I finally talked to one of my friends, and he knew her, and she didn't know me. And he says, "You know what? I'm taking my girlfriend skating in Aberdeen. You need to say, hey, come, Randy Knight and a bunch of us, his friends, we're going skating. Would you like to go?" So I did. But I made the move. I made the decision. I was going to go and talk to her. And I made the decision to talk again, to have another conversation. I made a decision to take her on a date. And friends, when you are falling in love, it is a decision to talk, to buy someone a gift, to write them a note, to write them a card. You're making decisions, and it's those decisions that take place that leads to love. Love is intentional. Your relationship is a series of choices and decisions. Over time, you decided to marry this person. And then in your marriage, you continue to make decisions. Those decisions determine how wonderful or how miserable your marriage is. So your marriage starts with it. And that's the great thing about it. If you don't like where you're at today, start making new choices. Start taking new steps of action. Because love is a deliberate daily decision. Take a look in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 9. The writer says, "Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and the labor which you perform under the sun." Notice he says, love your wife every day. It's a deliberate decision. He says, you've got to love her every day. And then he says, And notice he says that twice. Look at the verse. Whom you love all the days of your vain life. We've got it underlined. Then again, all your days. Love is a daily decision that I am going to take action and I am going to pursue my spouse. I'm going to invest in the relationship. I'm going to compliment. I am going to do acts of service. I'm going to have conversation. I'm going to be kind and gentle and help around the house, help with the kids, help them however I can. But love is an intentional decision. Many of us, when we lose that love and feeling, we think there's no hope. But there is hope. It starts with the choice. I heard of a man who hated his wife, wanted to divorce her. He went at a marriage counselor, and he was so ticked off at her. And the marriage counselor said, "Do you really want to make her pay for all the stuff she's done to you?" He says, "Yeah, I do." He says, "Okay, for the next 60 days, I want you to treat her like a queen. Buy her flowers, breakfast in bed, tell her you love her. Just treat her like a queen. And after 60 days, serve her divorce papers and say, I want to divorce you." And so the guy says, "That sounds great. I want to make her hurt." At the end of 60 days, the counselor met with the husband. He says, "So, what happened? You want to divorce her?" And he says, "Divorce her? She's the best woman in the world. Why would I ever want to divorce her?" You see, he made a conscious decision. And as he did the right action, it produced the right feeling. If you're waiting for the right feeling to love your spouse, your husband or wife, it's probably never going to come, and you will end up in divorce. So love is a deliberate decision. There's a couple things that kill love. One is offense, when someone does wrong to us. And we're going to address that one under point three. But the other one is apathy. Many times a couple gets married, the newness wears off, they drift apart, he's pursuing his career, she's pursuing her interests. Later on when they have kids, they're busy taking care of the kids, you know, changing diapers, you know, bathing them, you know, and you get done bathing them, then the kid gets into the cupboard and pours maple syrup and flour in his hair, so you have to bath them again. You know, and then you get him out of that mess. You get done bathing him. You get pajamas on him, put him in bed, and they come out, "I'm scared." They come, you put him back to bed. You know, you pray with them. They come out, "Oh, man, I'm thirsty." So you get him some water. You put him back to bed. They come out again, "You know, I've got a headache." And so you have to give him an aspirin. I mean, and in time, you're investing in your job and your family, and you have no more time or energy left for each other. And you've stopped making that decision where I am going to invest in my spouse. Friends, you have to make that daily decision to say, "Honey, sweetheart, darling, I am going to love you in action, in deed, and in thought." There's a handout. I believe it's on a table out there. I'm going to show this slide. Here's some intentional things you say. Some of you say, "I don't know where to start," okay? Here we go. Frequently tell your spouse you love them, all right? Frequently tell them you love them. Smile and be cheerful when you come home from work. That's a good thing. If you walk in the house, "What's for dinner?" I mean, that's not going to produce a lot of joy in your life. Here's another one. Help her wash and dry the dishes at least twice a week. Take his truck or car for a wash. Keep her gas tank filled up, especially in this cold weather. Take care of the children for at least 3 hours a week so your wife has free time. You say, "Craig, a lot of these are kind of pointed to the guys." Yeah, that's because us guys, we are the initiators of relationship, okay? Husbands are the initiators. Wives are the responders. Now, wives, you do need to initiate too. You just don't sit back and say what happens, happens. Another one, take her out for dinner or do something fun at least once a week or every other week, and then take the responsibility. Make the dinner reservations. Get the concert tickets. Don't leave that up to her. Get the babysitter. Next, greet each other with a smile when you come home, a hug and a kiss, and say, "Am I glad to see you? I really missed you today." And just talk a few minutes about how your day went. Give a lingering kiss. Sit close to each other, rub each other's back or feet, Wear each other's favorite perfume or cologne. Write love notes or letters. Let them know specific things you appreciate. Enthusiastically share each other's hobbies. Set a good example with the children. Talk favorably about your spouse to your kids when they're around and they can hear you, and when they're not around. Buy new lingerie and wear it to bed. Maintain your own spiritual life through Bible study, prayer, church attendance. That's just half the list. I want you to take one of these and say, God, how can I intentionally love my spouse? If your marriage has gotten a little dull, then you need to do something different. I can guarantee you can find at least one thing that you're probably not doing now that can daily invest in your marriage, okay? It's an action. Love is an action. But I want to talk about something now, and it's about your purity in your marriage, your thought life. You have to decide daily that I am going to be pure and devoted to my spouse. It says, live joyfully with your wife. That's what Ecclesiastes said. You cannot live joyfully with someone you do not live honestly with. And it's not just having an affair with someone, but it can be an emotional affair where you are getting your affirmation and your sense of well-being, and you're being filled up emotionally from a coworker at work. And you need to be careful of that, because a lot of times if you're not investing in each other and someone else makes comment, man, you look really sharp. I appreciate how you work so hard. Thanks for opening the door for me. And someone starts pouring into you and praising you. That's what sets you up for a divorce. So emotionally, you cannot have an affair emotionally. It's not just physically. Another aspect of purity in our marriage that we need to make a decision on is no pornography. And also guarding our thought life. We cannot lust over the opposite sex. When you're married, you only have one woman or one man in your life, and that's your spouse. You don't look at anyone else. Job 31, verse 1. Job said, I have made a covenant with my eyes that I will not look lustfully after a young woman. And I think Job was kind of older because his kids were older. Guys, your sex drive and the desire to look never die. Even when you're 90, it's still there. But you have to train your mind and say, I am going to love my wife. I'm going to put Proverbs 5:19 in action. Rejoice in the wife of your youth as a loving hind and a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times. Always be intoxicated with her love. How many of you men say, I can put that verse into practice? That's a good verse. Be devoted to your spouse. And one last area under this that I want to talk about, something you probably don't hear much in church. In fact, you've maybe have never heard this in church before, but I want to talk about masturbation. Wow, it's quiet in here. There were no amens on that. Mark Gunger, who offered Laugh Your Way Through Marriage, who we did in our small group last fall, was a great series, but he talks about how masturbation in marriage hurts couples, and he says, in the context of two people living together and ignoring each other, and instead of making love to each other, they make love to themselves, masturbating is not real sex. You want great sex? You want real sex? For the love of God, stop masturbating. Pay attention to yourself. That is the only way to get there. The reason I say this is because there are many things that the devil wants to use to take us from fulfilling our sexual needs legitimately. And masturbation is one of them. Sometimes couples, they get angry and they withhold sex from each other. And after a while, the one's frustrated, they resort to that. And it can get, and after a while, they don't want sex. Don't masturbate in marriage. Have great sex. You say, I don't feel like it. You know what? Tough luck. God says in the Bible, your body is not your own.
It is your spouse's. Now, at the same time, that doesn't mean that you're disrespectful to your spouse and have them do things that they find offensive, or that you are, you know, you want to make love seven times a day. No, we're not saying that. But what we're saying is you need to make a decision in every area of your life, body, soul, spirit, mind, intentionally love your spouse and invest in them. When you make that daily decision, you will have a great marriage. In fact, you'll have a super marriage. Daily decision, that's the first characteristic of love we need to apply to our lives. Let's go to the second one. Love is selfless sacrifice. The next thing we need to realize about love and producing a super marriage is that love is a selfless sacrifice. It's not about what you receive. Love does not shout, please me, give me what I want. It's quite the opposite. Love is what you give, not about what you get. A few years ago, our small group, we were doing a study. It was called Sacred Marriage. And one of the statements they said in that just really popped out at me, and it's always stuck with me, and that marriage is designed not to make you happy. It's designed to make you holy. Think about that. Marriage is not designed to make you happy. It's designed to make you holy. And yet so many times couples enter into marriage thinking, well, this person's just going to please me and satisfy me and make me great. I was talking with someone who has been married a few months recently, they said, and this came as a result of our small group, and the speaker on our small group, Indestructible Marriage. By the way, if you aren't at the Indestructible Couples Night, you need to be at. It's one of the best teachings on marriage that I have seen in a long time. And the speaker on Indestructible Marriage, Jimmy Evans, was saying, when I got married, I thought I'd come home and my wife would be this vision of beauty and happiness and happy to see me. And it wasn't that way. And he talks about how selfish he was in their marriage and how he really hurt his wife. Marriage is not about you, okay? I want you to look at yourself and say, marriage is not about me, okay? It's about your spouse. I think the Apostle Paul captured that thought of marriage doesn't make you happy, it makes you holy in Ephesians chapter 5. I want you to turn there. It's one of the passages we had you look at it. In Ephesians 5, verse 22, it says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Verse 33, nevertheless, let each one of you particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Paul is saying that marriage is not about pleasing yourself. It's about honoring and pleasing your spouse. It's putting your husband ahead of you if you're a wife. It's about putting your wife ahead of you if you're the husband. If you're in a dating relationship, I want you to ask yourself, is it characterized by selfishness or selflessness? If your boyfriend or girlfriend is a very selfish person, drop them like a wet noodle and get out of that relationship as fast as you can, because it will not get any better in marriage. I can guarantee it. How they treat you before marriage will be escalated in marriage. Now, can God do a work of grace? Yes, he can. He can change marriages. I have seen God take horrible marriages, marriages on the verge of divorce, and totally turn them around and create a beautiful thing. But be wise. Don't set yourself up for pain. You deserve better than that, students, young people, singles, okay? Don't settle for a second-rate relationship. Look for someone who is selfless. Last weekend, Pastor Allen and Colleen Schaber, the leaders of the Assemblies of God in Wyoming, had an orientation for the new pastors in the district, and my wife and I were invited to attend and help host. And they were sharing some different things, and they talked about marriage. And Colleen made this statement. I thought it was really powerful. She said, "Love is not passion. It is the pulse of sacrifice. There are no standing lovers. The only way to love is to lay down. Lay down plans. Lay down agendas. Lay down self. Love is always laying down. This is how to make love out of a marriage. Love lays down its own wants to lift up the will of another. Love lets go of its plans to hold on to a person." Friends, you will never find fulfillment in selfishness. And if you are always wanting your spouse to give and you're not giving anything back, you are going to be frustrated in your marriage. Because selfishness is a parasite. And as you feed it, it only grows in it once more. Selfishness will destroy your marriage. But when you have selfless sacrifice, when you lay your life down, when you're saying, "Honey, I want to please you. Dear, I want to honor and respect you." And that word in verse 33, that word respect, it means to be in awe. Ladies, are you in awe of your husband? I hope so. That's the kind of respect. I mean, we're talking about a high honor. We're talking about, and guys, you're to lay your life down as Jesus laid his life down. How did he lay his life down? He let his body be whipped. He let a crown of thorns be rammed on his head. He had 9-inch nails driven into his hands, and when he was hoisted up on the cross, it caused his shoulders to be separated. And every time he moved, it sent a lightning-like pain through his body. And as he's hanging on the cross, he's suffocating, and he has to push himself up, which causes pain in the shoulders and in his nerves like you can't believe. And he hung on the cross for hours. That's the kind of sacrifice Christ gave. Friends, marriage is not about selfishness. It's about giving and selflessness. And if you want a great marriage, you need to say, "I am going to work at pleasing my spouse." Jesus said in Luke 9:23, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it." Deny yourself. Pick up your cross. Die to what you want. Lay down your rights. That's what Jesus said a disciple does. And you're catching what he says? He says, if a man and a woman, I think you can make this application, if a husband and wife are being disciples, denying themselves and laying their lives down, if they're both disciples, if they're losing their life, man, they're going to find an awesome marriage. You're going to have a super marriage if you lay your life down. Both of you. And you can't say, "Well, I'm just going to wait till he does it. Or I'm going to wait till she does it because I'm always the one who goes first. You know, it's always me." No, you have to decide, "I'm going to selflessly initiate and give love even if I get nothing in return. And God, I'm leaving their response up to you." If every couple did this, man, there would be no more divorce in America. There would be some really super marriages. How many want a super marriage? All right, selflessly sacrifice, make a daily decision. Number three, let's wrap this up. Number three is forever forgiving. Love is forever forgiving. Last week as we started our series, we learned that love obliterates offense. When someone hurts you, when someone wrongs you, you can overcome the offense through love. And I guarantee, being married, your spouse will hurt you. Okay, you will be offended. All those who are engaged, all those who are dating, just realize you will be offended in marriage. There'll be plenty of opportunities for that. And you have to learn how to forgive freely, generously, and frequently. Okay? In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4 and 5, it says, "Love is patient, love is kind, and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. It does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. There is that selfless sacrifice. Is not provoked and does not take into account a wrong suffered. When you're wronged, you don't say, you know what? He did this. He left his underwear out on the floor again. Number one, I hate it when he does that. I've told him so many times never to do that. Tomorrow, Monday morning, he left his underwear out again. Tuesday morning, he did it again. Love keeps no record of wrongs. You know what we do a lot of times? Our spouse does something to us, and we hold it. It's like we stuff it in a gunny sack. We gunny sack our spouses. We put it in a gunny sack. They do something else wrong. We stick that in a gunny sack. They do something else wrong. We stick that in a gunny sack. They do something else. And before you know it, we've got this gunny sack full. And finally, we get sick and tired of carrying this around. And our spouse is unsuspecting. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to let them have it. And you haul off and whack them with the gunny sack. And all of these things come spilling out. And they're going, man, what was that all about? Friends, forgiveness does not mean you stuff things. Forgiveness means you address wrong and resolve conflict biblically. Forgiveness involves reconciliation. You need to communicate. You need to talk about issues. I heard about a man who he had diabetes, but he didn't talk to his wife about it. And diabetes in some people can cause you to lose sexual desire. And he had no desire for his wife. And his wife thought he was having an affair. And instead of talking to him, she went and talked to all of her friends. And before long, she was convinced he's having an affair. So to get back at him, she went out and had an affair. And he was never having an affair. But they never talked about it. Whatever your issues are, if you're holding something against your spouse, talk about it today. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, Paul said. You need to keep a short list of accounts. You can't be tallying them up all the time or putting things in a gunny sack. You have to forgive them. Love does not keep score. You might say, but Craig, I'm really struggle with forgiveness. You don't know how I've been hurt. It's time and time again. We've talked about it. It never changes. If you're having trouble with forgiveness, you need to come Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, upstairs, our iConnect group on the bait of Satan. It deals with offense. You need to learn how to deal with offense. God can set you free from unforgiveness. Unforgiveness, if not dealt with, is a poison that will permeate you and it will lead you into divorce. You say, oh, I'd never get to divorce. Friends, divorce, Jesus said, divorce was a result of a hard heart. When you say, I won't forgive you for what you've done, you are hardening your heart. And when you make that daily decision, instead of to forgive, when you say, I'm going to harden my heart, I'm not going to forgive. I'm not going to forgive. You are on the path to divorce. Love is a daily decision to forgive. It's forever forgiving. Well, as we wrap up today, I want to share a story about Pastor Robert and Debbie Morris. Robert pastors Gateway Church in Dallas, Texas. If you took the small group, the Blessed Life, that's Pastor Morris. Gateway Church was started in 2000, 24 years ago, and has grown to over 24,000 active members. Pastor Robert also has a weekly TV series, show. It's called The Blessed Life. It's on 90,000 homes in America and is broadcast to over 200 countries around the world. And Debbie and him have been married for 32 years. They have three children that are grown and married and have grandkids. So they have a great marriage, a great ministry, a great family. But what many people don't know is that just a few years into their marriage, Robert had a major moral catastrophe. He violated his marriage vows, and he stepped out of ministry. He went to extensive counseling to be set free from sexual addictions, and his wife forgave him. He repented and got help, number one, but she was willing to forgive him. And because of that, they have a great marriage, a great family, and a great ministry. What would have happened if Robert would have said, I'm going to hang on to my sinful lifestyle and not repent, not be selfless, not make this decision to love my wife? He'd have none of that today. What would have happened if Debbie would have said, I'm not going to forgive him. He violated my trust. I can't. Friends, forgiveness is not a matter of can't, because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. When you say, I can't forgive, you're saying, I won't. Forgiveness is a matter of our will. God wants you to have a super marriage. He wants you to be the dynamic duo, not archenemies. And you can have that if you fill your lives and your marriages with love. Please bow your heads and close your eyes.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.